To order, I've got 9:32. Let's see, Ms. Mouse, would you take roll for us?
Yes, Dr. Stenhouse,
Here.
Dr. Davis Wilson,
Present.
Dr. Davey,
Present.
Ms. Denton,
Present.
Dr. Rates.
Present.
We have quorum.
Great. All right. And we have a little bit shorter agenda than we've seen in the past several months. So welcome to that. And board staff, thanks for putting that together. I know there's a lot, even with a smaller agenda, there's still a lot of background work that we have no idea what's going on, and appreciate the effort you guys are doing. So, and then committee members, of course, thanks for being here and doing this process all together. And those of the community that are joining us, welcome, and glad you're here as well. So let's move on to the next agenda item, approval of minutes. June 30th, 2022. I am recused because I wasn't present at that meeting. So, would somebody mind making a motion for that?
I move to approve those minutes.
Stenhoff, just to note, I was also absent, so I will not be able to vote.
I was present because there were some slackers on the committee, and so typically that's
And we
me.
wouldn't have had a quorum anyway, but thanks, guys.
Yeah, typically, this is a team effort. Let's not forget that. And so it takes all of us. So I'll go ahead and second.
Perfect. Donna, I'll go ahead and take the vote. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay. And then July 29th, was there anybody absent that needs to be recused from that?
I think that was yours, Dr. Davey.
Yeah, that might have been my when I was slacking.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my slacking.
Well, we're there to cover for you as well, Dr. Davies. So,
Team.
do we have a motion to approve the July 29th regular session, executive session minutes?
So moved.
We have a
I will
second.
second.
All right, thank you. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, next agenda item is discussion, consideration, possible action regarding complaints and recommendations to the board. Complaint number 22-26 for Jessica Marshall. There are two people recused from this, myself and Dr. Davis Wilson. And Brian, I believe, or Dr. Davy, I believe you're the lead on this.
Yes, I am.
Dr. Davey, Dr. Stenhoff, I'll be stepping off. If staff can please message me when this is complete. Thank you.
Okay, if everybody can just bear with me for about 1 minute, I'm gonna move some things around so I can talk to what I need to talk to. All right. Apparently, I need more than three screens. All right. And we're off. So, moving to agenda item five, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding complaints and recommendations to the board. Please note that a person or representative of a person who has filed or is the subject of a complaint and is present today may make a brief statement. We would ask that you limit that to less than 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me as the chair and the lead of this discussion item. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or the respondent after their statements. Only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and the respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it'll make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that the individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients or children that are identified in the complaint. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and that the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. The committee may go into executive session to discuss any confidential records or to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Gene Galvin, who is present today. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of items. Well, I guess I really need to change the order of items of any of this agenda today. The complaint scheduled for review today is number 2226 against behavior analyst Jessica Marshall. Before we proceed, we've already had some recusals. Board staff, do we want to list those recusals now for the record, or are they already recorded?
I believe it has been recorded, but just for the record, Dr. Stenhoff and Dr. Davis-Wilson are recused.
Okay. And as a point of matter, I will also note that I am not recused, although I do know Jessica Marshall. In 2017, she worked for the same agency as I worked for. But since my departure from there, Ms. Marshall and I have not had any personal or professional contact. And so I feel as if I am in an unbiased position to review this matter today.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I would make the same note. Ms. Marshall and I also worked at the same agency in lateral positions at the time. I do feel that I can move forward objectively with the review of this matter.
Thank you for that, Ms. Denton. All right. So I'm the lead committee member for this complaint and will provide the committee with an overview of the complaint. We'll start with what the complainant SM alleges. So give me 1 second to toggle there. All right, so on March 29th of 2022, our board staff received a complaint from SM via email in which she alleged the following. She essentially has outlined a case where an individual was involved in conducting an FBA. And so the complaint is really started off with some information around the complaint and then moved into discussion of the FBA. And so the FBA was completed by Ms. Marshall on February 3rd of 2022. The complaint recognizes that there are some constraints to outside providers in terms of their contracts and arrangements when an FBA is completed by a behavior analyst that is serving as a contractor to a public or private school or other entity. The complaint alleges that the school in question, BASIS, has not been able to develop in a timely fashion an effective behavior intervention plan noted as a BIP in your documentation, or to provide evidence-based behavior supports because of failures that the complaint believes are inherent within the FBA that was completed. The complaint notes that as of writing her complaint, the two months had passed since the FBA had been provided to BASIS, and that as of yet, BASIS had not developed that sufficient plan, and it was apparent that BASIS staff needed the support of the behavior analyst to guide them in this process. Furthermore, the complaint alleges some ethical violations. I will note that the ethical violations that are noted in the complaint are from a previous version of the BACB Code of Ethics, the 2016 version, and that those numbers are 2.2 or 2.02 responsibility and 2.04 third-party involvement and services. The complaint alleges that the FBA failed failed to include WM, who was the individual who from whom the FBA was conducted, failed to include WM, his parents, and any information that could have been gathered from them as part of a records review. Further, the complaint alleges that it is apparent that Ms. Marshall failed to remember who the client was in this situation as she conducted and completed her FBA. Second, ethics code that's listed again in an outdated version of the BACB code 3.01, behavior analytic assessment. Complaint alleges behavior analysts are required to conduct an assessment prior to making recommendations. That includes collecting data and using behavior analytic conventions. Also noted that the complaint suggests that, as can be seen from the FBA, insufficient data was collected and would not constitute a behavior analytic assessment. Complaint goes on to state that because of the failure to abide by these ethical rules, the BCBA in this case, or licensed behavior analyst Ms. Marshall, the basis has not been able to provide the basis has been provided with inadequate guidance, which leaves the student without effective programming. The complaint goes on to ask that the board investigate this and provide proper guidance to Ms. Marshall and with regard to her role in providing ABA services to schools under a particular contract. The board has also received, just as note, a multitude of records from SEEK with regard to this complaint. I believe that Ms. Marshall and her attorney also received those same documents. Continuing. So we had a timely response from the licensee in this case, and we'll go ahead and highlight some of the response to these allegations that Ms. Marshall and her attorney have provided the board. So it should be noted that they wanted us to note that something that I've already done, that the complainant improperly cites the outdated 2016 BACB Code of Ethics. Also would like to point out that the complainant SM never sought to contact Ms. Marshall in any way prior to filing this complaint, which the complaint notes is a process that is suggested by the BACB when trying to resolve ethical dilemmas. It does not, furthermore, the licensee has responded to us that that the complaint does not ask for additional clarification from BASIS or the attendees, the multidisciplinary team, which Ms. Marshall attended and took place after, took place after the conclusion of the FBA. Also noted that BASIS took part in assisting the agency SEEK in this time and identifying the best contacts for setting up observations and teacher interviews and provided the team with future meeting dates. Ms. Marshall also completed an initial correspondence as the clinical supervisor overseeing all home and all community-based clinicians. The focus was turned on to WM by the assigned client, another behavior analyst, Ms. Miller. The response goes on to note that data was collected and informal interviews were conducted to ensure previously reported behaviors and corresponding consequences were noted to start the establishing potential functions for the behavior. Furthermore, licensee notes that data collection was completed in person by one Ms. Miller and one Ms. Barkley through ABC, antecedent behavior consequence. Continuous recording data on both WM and randomized peers were collected to obtain a semi-control to compare behavior against. Ms. Marshall conducted a formal structured interview with the persons. In this case, it was the algebra teacher who was identified as the best representative of the students' skill set. Some other highlights from the licensee's response was that there were consequence strategies cited in the FBA recommendation that included sayings such as ignoring, not because the behavior was hypothesized as attention seeking, but because the implications by the dean of students and some teachers had begun to acknowledge that WM's behavior as a threat to their own threats to their own control of the classroom, which could result in escalating behavior. The licensee also states that the complaint makes an assumption that the hypothesized function determined by analyzing the results of the FBA were incorrect, which appears to have no basis other than her outside, as the licensee calls it, guesswork. So this will not be further acknowledged. We also have the point here that at no point did Ms. Marshall ever view BASIS as her client. So she refutes that. She is confident that clarifying information about how the assessment was conducted and treatment recommendations demonstrate that WM was the priority in this case. The complaint SM alleges that because of lack of actionable recommendations in the FA, that WM remains without behavior intervention plan, and that also notes that as an advocate and an attorney, that SM should be addressing her concerns with BASIS for failing to provide SM with equal and equitable chance, provide WM with the equal and equitable chance at a least restrictive environment when appropriate recommendations were provided by SEEK's licensed behavior analyst. I think I'll pause there since we've got, I think, the gist of it. And we'll call that a good summary at this point. So is the complainant SM present? If so, can you please unmute yourself and make a brief statement if you wish at this time? Please, again, I remind you, no more than 5 minutes. And please realize that the committee may or may not have questions for you following your statement. Thank you.
Hi. I'm SM, and I'm the one that filed the complaint. I know that I did not file this complaint lightly. I work in a lot of schools. I have a lot of clients, but I was very concerned about this functional behavior assessment. And as I said in my complaint, if it had simply said consultation to BASIS, I would not have had to consider it in the record as an FBA. This is a student that had significant issues in his school setting. One of the advocates that I work with had been attending the meetings, and then I began attending the meetings because I felt I could guide the team in hopefully implementing some strategies that would be more proactive in nature and address some of WM's underlying challenges, which I feel is not reflected well in this functional behavior assessment. I don't believe it's an FBA. I think that's the critical issue, and that unfortunately the school believes it was an FBA. And so I think that they're misguided. I think as behavior analysts, there should be a higher standard in conducting functional behavior assessments. And what happened was the school had actually conducted one and felt it was inadequate, but actually the school one was never reviewed by the BCBA and incorporated. And actually it was probably more thorough, but we felt that another one by somebody who specializes in behavior analysis would be helpful to the team. And unfortunately, that did not occur. So I do recognize that, you know, there is a recommendation or a suggestion by the Behavior Analyst Certification Board to bring issues up directly with the BCBA. However, in this situation, I felt really compelled to bring this issue forward. I see a lot of behavior analysts who are being contracted by schools. And I think that these ethical rules should be addressed and that BCBA should be knowledgeable of them and understand that sometimes there's a conflict when your client, the person paying you, is a school, but the client is the student. And in this situation, I felt that the client did not benefit from the services of a behavior analyst. That's all. You did a wonderful job summarizing, so I don't have to go through anything else.
Thank you. Committee, following those statements, any questions for SM? So SM, you hold a distinct number of credentials, right? So you're an attorney at law. You also hold a national certification as a behavior analyst at the doctorate level. You have let your license in the state of Arizona lapse, correct?
Yes, that is correct. I am not practicing behavior analysis in Arizona because I decided to practice law instead.
So just one of the questions I have is when you're attending the meetings and as such, how do you square that? Are you acting as counsel when you're working with the individuals, or are you working as someone who is a doctorate level board certified behavior analyst?
I am working as an educational consultant and as an attorney. The families retain my services as legal counsel.
Okay. And in that case, your client is the family and the child?
Yes.
Okay. Some other questions I have. I read through the FBA. And so when you were mentioning the fact that we may have, they may have missed an idea of having a behavior intervention plan, that the school did not necessarily know what to do with the recommendations that the licensee provided. I guess it would be helpful for me from my point of view to understand what you believe a functional behavior assessment is and is not, I guess.
I would have expected a review, a records review. I would have expected more than one day of visits. I would have expected interviews with both the student and the parents. I would have expected interviews with more than just one teacher. Algebra tends to be, that person's going to have one point of view. And I would have expected data collected over a period of time. I didn't see any data.
General, and you can put it on your legal hat for this, IDIA, correct me if I'm wrong, does not operationally define what a functional behavior assessment is still to this day, correct?
Yes.
And so, understanding that a functional behavior assessment is an information gathering process that could take on a multitude of approaches that are I would say reviewed and then moved forward by a multidisciplinary team. And in this case, the clinician that's been assigned to it. Is it your position today, and as I read through your statement, that you believe you would have taken on this case and acted differently? In respect to this FBA.
Say that again.
I guess what I'm really asking is it your opinion that just clinically you would have done things differently than Ms. Marshall?
That I would have?
Yeah.
If I had been retained to do an FBA?
Yeah. Or if you would have hired somebody else to do the FBA, that you just are assuming that things should have gone slightly differently? That's what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I do want to clarify. I have, as you can imagine, I've read numerous FBAs in both my previous work as well as in my current work. And so I may disagree with the outcome. I may disagree with the analysis. I may disagree with the findings or the recommendations. But as long as it has those key components, I know that the data was collected operationally, objectively, and this behavior analyst made these determinations of what the function of the behavior is, I would not have filed a complaint on that. It has nothing to do with what the interpretation or what the specific recommendations were.
So I've read the FBA. I too have done and completed and sat in many meetings around FBAs, and there are interviews that are conducted. There is a record review that's conducted. Whether or not the parents were involved, again, kind of falls on the situation in the context of who's going to be able to provide what in terms of possibilities to be able to look at potential recommendations and moving forward. I see data collection. I see data collection going against typical peers. I see continuous ABC data collection. I see the summaries of that in terms of reports and notes of, you know, that are leading essentially to the final report. And then I see a hypothesis being generated based off of that. And so I guess what I'm not understanding from USM is where's the problem there and how that was conducted? Because in reviewing the records, you know, I may have done things differently as a clinician and approached something differently, but there's nothing that I found in the documentation that is inherently against best practice.
Oh, the fact that there was no variety, it was insufficient data. You believe that there was enough data collected? I mean, the process itself of putting together an FBA, that there were various tools used to collect the data. I didn't see a records review. Nothing about the student other than that one day of observations and interview.
So I'll let the licensee respond to the question around data, but the data that I reviewed in terms of the reports, there's no prescribed, my understanding in terms of, there is no description that you must take data for this many hours, this many days, and this many settings. It is, again, contextual to the individual. And in this case, provide the information to be able to formulate a hypothesis that can then be ultimately tested through potential interventions. And so when I look at the information here that's provided, again, not saying this is necessarily the way I would do it or not do it, there, the information is there, the observations are conducted, data is provided, rational hypotheses are formulated. So I'm trying to get down to where, you know, an exact moment in time where something that's prescribed, again, knowing that an FBA is an information gathering process, where you believe the licensee ran afoul of one of our rules or statutes in conducting this functional behavior assessment.
Yeah, I think I've said it was lack of sufficient data, relying on just this one interview and relying on the observations conducted during that day. I don't believe that is sufficient to develop a functional hypothesis. As a result, to me, this read more like the school was seeking confirmation of what they were already doing. And so then this FBA resulted in the school continuing what they had been doing, taking away the students' technology, for example. So to me, it was more, it read more like a consultation to the school rather than an FBA.
All right. I appreciate that. I think the one thing I would just suggest back to you is that there are, in the report, there are multiple days that where the individual is observed. There is clear information as to why the particular teacher was interviewed. And so there is not just a singular day of observation. And I think that that's pretty clearly noted that there were observations. I'm trying to scan quickly through my notes. I apologize, but I believe in the narrative observations, we have them conducted on 1/21/22, as well as narrative information coming out on 1/31. So there is more than just a singular observation going on by the group conducting this FBA. But again, I think that you've answered my questions and from your point of view, and I appreciate it. Other committee members, do you have questions?
No questions at this time.
I think you covered the ones that I had as well.
Thank you. All right. I appreciate that. SM, Dr. Marks, you can go ahead and mute your reach up again. Thank you. Very good. Ms. Marshall, you're present today. I see you're also represented by legal counsel. Both you and your legal counsel can unmute yourselves. Please state your full name for the record. You and your attorney then will have the opportunity to make a brief statement to the committee. Again, please hold that to 5 minutes and then the same rules as I mentioned before. The committee may or may not have questions for you following that statement.
Good morning, board members. My name is Artie Eves, and I'm representing Jesse Marshall. I'm going to hand it over to Jesse and allow her to make her statement, and I might just reserve a minute at the end if I think there's anything I need. Thank you.
Hi. Is my mic working? Yes. Okay. Great. Sorry. I have earbuds in. Okay. Hi. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Dr. Davey, for providing such a thorough review of what was submitted. I know that there was a lot of stuff in there, so I really appreciate you taking the time to go through all of that and, you know, identify where data was collected. I did submit a lot of information, so I don't want to spend too much time reiterating any of the written response, but to add a little bit more context of the teacher interview that was conducted.
Has left the call.
Oh.
What?
Did everyone get that notice?
I hope not.
We muted that person, so go ahead, Ms. Marshall.
Oh, okay. Let's get back. It's okay. So I chose to complete the FIRT with the student's first period teacher. This teacher had worked with the student in previous year and was also set to become the dean of students in the upcoming week. The coming responsibilities of this teacher were to ensure the implementation of accommodations over CBIP and be the determining factor of moving this student forward or not. Throughout the FIRT, I was provided background information that was not available when they provided review records. He provided information on previous attempts to motivate the client and what he did not feel was working. The school is highly academically competitive, and because the client failed a non-core class last year, he had to retake the entire grade and was struggling with motivation and the loss of peer relations. The teacher did not report that behaviors were unmanageable, and the same was seen during multiple observations across classrooms. Concerns from the teacher were peer bullying the student, lack of class time engagement, and the fear that the student would again fail the non-core class this year and be moved out of the school. So recommendations were made considering all of those facts. And after review of the data, multiple meetings with the clinicians who were in the school to do observations. And those were made based on the hypothesized function of escape, and additional strategies were provided to ensure that the child's mental health and emotional regulation were being tended to. I don't know that there are any other points that I specifically wanted to make, but I am open to questions.
Thank you, committee. We'll begin with some questions for Ms. Marshall, Dr. Reid, Ms. Den, do you have any questions? No? You want me to start this off again? All right. I'm happy. So, I mean, let's just get right to the point, right? Talk to us about your decision as a licensed behavior analyst to not include the parents as one of the potential sources of information.
Mm-hmm. So the LBA that was selected to take on this, this case was very well versed with FBAs. She had great rapport with the school at a different location. She met with the dean of students first day, went in, talked to him. We had a supervisee who was a certified teacher in the room, who was also the lead life skills teacher, which is an adolescent group. So she was acutely aware of expectations for the classroom and for that age group of teenagers. So it was very clear upon the first day kind of what was not working for the client. I don't necessarily spend too much time interviewing parents of teenagers when it's a school problem. Of course, I would consider it if there was, you know, very different contingencies or this was a new school and he did, you know, very well last year, but that was not the case. It seemed that the teacher had excellent information to provide and would be able to be the best person to talk to about what was happening in the school and what needed to change in the school.
And in terms of, as I reviewed, I mean, again, I think committee members, we've had like about 300 pages of information. As I reviewed the information, there were several interviews conducted, it looked like, with the parents, perhaps as part of, as either part of CFT meetings or perhaps of other services that were being provided. Were those records that were submitted, I believe, by you and your attorney, were those part of the record review at the time as well?
I'm sorry, did you say interviews?
There was, I think it was the discussions about the parents were disclosing some information. I think it was in a CFT meeting. If that discussion it was part of the record review or was happening before, I think it was happening before the FDA was conducted.
There was the parent information that came out was at the Met or the IEP. There was a little bit of confusion on what the meeting actually was because they had an IEP the week before. So I may have said it was the IEP, but information from the parents and questions and concerns from the parents came at the actual Met meeting when we were reviewing the FBA. There were, I think I had a note or two about parent requests regarding technology and not having that unsupervised was in the IEP that was supplied the week before our Met. But most of the information from the parents came from the FBA meeting.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at, just so I can reference it correctly for you. It's, well, in our packets, committee members, it's 98, but it's the child and family team meeting note dated 2/4/2022, where the parents are providing some information about brainstorming and some other information, where BCBA presented the interview results narrative. It looked like the parents were giving some input there, but you're saying that's essentially as part of the wrap up of the FBA there, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
I have a few more questions for you, but I just need to toggle through my, thing here. With regard to the complaints, allegations with, around understanding who the client was in this situation, I wondered if you would just opine on your understanding of that and how you operate as an LBA when conducting FBA for essentially for a third party.
Sure. The client is the student. I have refrained from using initials because there are a lot of that I didn't want to mix up. So it is the student. He is the client. He is the person who was going to benefit from the services. He was the one who was referred. We had a payer. At no point in my career have I ever really prioritized what a payer was going to do. I have an ethical obligation. I have worked with a lot of different schools and a lot of different teachers, and I have learned how data can be presented to get a team to really want to help and engage themselves in a plan. And I have seen ways to present data that kind of put schools on the defense. So no raw data was presented. It was all in narrative form because of the history that I have had with schools. I am going to create all of my treatment recommendations based on a hypothesized function of what I saw in the FBA, observations, data collection, and looking at peer norms, because I feel like that's very important, and identifying things that, you know, may be neurotypical that aren't necessarily wrong for a student to be doing and may help them, you know, regulate themselves during class. I'm not going to prioritize that, but I am going to absolutely write a treatment plan that if I see that there's issues in the classroom and there's, you know, a lack of structure or that a whole class would benefit from a recommendation that would benefit the student, I would absolutely put that in there so that an entire classroom may benefit from this. So the student and his peers were thought about when some of these recommendations were made. We didn't want him to be seen as different. He's, you know, a teenager. It's not like you have multiple paraprofessionals in an elementary school. It was very important for us to provide recommendations that could be applied in a very nondescript way.
Let's transition right to those recommendations, right? So the treatment summary, you begin, and again, I'm looking at your FBA document now. Treatment summary, replacement behaviors identified, I think it begins with the very first one is, if you beat me to it, don't feel free to interrupt. Noncompliance, right, is hypothesized that the function of noncompliance is escape, placement behavior, requesting a break, requesting help. Talk to us a little bit about the antecedent strategies that you selected to be able to address the potential for an escape function.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at the, I mean, hopefully you have
I do. So there were a few things that were kind of already happening that the teacher reported were helping and not helping. It's of course really difficult to identify without doing an FA, especially in a classroom that there's no attention given. So to kind of guard for that and to also address some things that were presented in the IEP of a potential issue with executive dysfunction, a conversation that was had during the IEP was to identify if this is a know-how issue or a won't-do issue. So is it motivation or does he need this task broken down for him? And that wasn't something that we were necessarily able to see in the observation. So we did talk about kind of priming it in priming what he could do to ask for a break, what he could do if he needed help with something, but to position it as to the whole class. So it wasn't singling him out. In the teacher interview, it came out that there was active bullying happening from peers because he was held back and the teacher was very afraid of him being a little bit depressed and that motivation issue showing up because of that. So I wanted to make sure that they were aligning him with positive attention because he was scoring grades ahead in most of his classes. So he was, you know, able to answer questions correctly. So I wanted to make sure that praise and attention were given to him as a model for the classroom. The breaks, structured breaks, providing him time to use a tablet, which he was provided by the school in appropriate time. So after class, after he's completed his work, wherever they feel like that is appropriate and doesn't set him apart. The tablet allowance, however, was an issue for the parents, and something that we saw in observations was that he was supposed to have a tablet for his first period class because the book was on it, and he had jailbroken the tablet and used it for internet for the rest of the day. So my suggestion was to provide a physical textbook for him so that would kind of avoid the surfing the web during the school. And then the check-ins were kind of already in place with his resource teacher. But my suggestion was that the resource teacher actually check in with the other teachers because he was just relying on the client's self-report of essentially good behavior to get reinforcement.
And then just one other question that I had on the report, there's an adjustment disorder unspecified right below that. That diagnosis, where did that diagnosis come from?
Mm-hmm. That is a great question. The system that SEEK was using was archaic and used for hospitals. There was no way to create a client chart without selecting a diagnosis. I am unsure if that diagnosis was provided by the school or if our intake team or our EHR specialist chose one of the top diagnoses to be able to create a chart for him. So it will be printed on every SEEK document. There's no way to create a note or report without attaching a diagnosis. So I am not entirely sure where that came from.
but not a diagnosis that you provided.
Absolutely not. No, I do not diagnose. And no.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Other board members, questions around the functional behavior assessment, the process, anything else you've heard from Ms. Marshall?
Dr. Davey, I don't have any questions. You know, I think there are some comments that can be made whenever it comes to deliberations. So I promise you, I did review all of the information. I think you are adequately covering a lot of the questions that would be had. But I think that there was copious amounts of information that was provided in the documentation and provided a lot of clarifying information.
Yep, I appreciate that. Dr. Rates, are you good for us to move?
I am, yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Everybody can go ahead with the exception of committee members and mute themselves. So the committee will now begin their deliberations. Please note that a deliberate, oh, sorry, actually, counsel, I had said you had asked that I reserve some time for you following Ms. Marshall.
Thank you for that. I don't have anything to add.
Well, I'm glad I remember that at least. Well, next time, you know, wave your hand if you have something to add. Okay, back to the matter at hand. Committee will now begin their deliberations. Please note the deliberation is the time for the committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing the licensee. I will begin the deliberations since I was the lead for this case. As someone who has conducted a fair amount of functional behavior assessments over the years, who has reviewed them both for individuals in and out of state in a variety of settings, from hospital settings to school settings to home settings, I understand that there are times and places where particular approaches to gathering the information that then completes the functional behavior assessment needs to be a good fit, a good contextual fit with regard to process, with regard to the players involved, with regard to those that are going to actually ultimately serve as intervention agents. I think that is something that's incumbent upon both licensed behavior analysts and behavior analysts to ensure there is not a cookie cutter approach to functional behavior assessment. In fact, that's my personal belief is that's why we don't see it operationally defined by IDIA or by the state of Arizona, or even to that matter by the BACB or this board. It is an iterative process that is constantly evolving as the individuals that are involved in the case either one, gather more information, two, information that they once had is either proven or disproven as hypothesis are put forward in terms of intervention to be able to make sure that we are making meaningful change. And reviewing the documents that are provided and the notes, I am failing to see anything here that rises to the level of a violation in terms of statute and a rule. And that is what we are tasked with today, is to look for that. And I am, for one, not finding it. That I will stop there and allow my fellow committee members to chime in.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, whenever it comes to reviewing all of the information, I will definitely thank Ms. Marshall for all of the information that was provided. It was very helpful to be able to review even billing notes, you know, looking at what was billed for what services, what the SBA was. I think that it was also helpful whenever we were going through and answering questions or asking questions, receiving those answers. You know, I very well might have conducted an SBA differently. You know, I might have just based off the review of this included raw data, you know, but I think that the licensee had the opportunity to say, you know, the reason why, you know, taking contextually in what it was within this setting that might have made the recommendations more receptive, you know, and whenever it comes to this and there are those lack of definitions and parameters surrounding what a functional behavior assessment is, and even within the field, you know, looking at the, if you were to ask one BCBA versus another BCBA, I also am failing to find after another review of the Arizona revised rules and statutes where this rises to the level of a substantiated complaint.
I would agree with my fellow committee members. I think similar sentiments that for those of us that do engage in these activities on a regular basis across different settings and different spaces, we may have different ways that we report that. We may share the raw data or not in that report. I too appreciate all of the information that was submitted. I also appreciate the thoughtful responses that were given in terms of the rationale for why certain things were written the way they were or presented the way that they were. And I would agree, in reviewing this, I don't see anything that rises to the level of action here.
Thank you, Dr. Rates. And I would also just add to this, in looking at the information and understanding the interplay of the student being the client, the school bringing them in, bringing in the agency, obviously the school needing assistance and wanting help, you know, SM is correct that there are a lot of agencies, a lot of institutions, schools included, that reach out to professionals for assistance, and making sure that we understand those boundaries and those definitions of who the client is. I feel in this case, the licensee has done a good job of not only explaining that, but I believe the documentation shows that as well. Also, I think that SM in a unique position of being an attorney and also past practicing behavior analyst has an understanding of how she might conduct things and how the information that she would like to see, and that sometimes may or may not coincide with the information that's presented. And in such case, you know, if raw data is really the piece you want to see, that a proper request to said licensee requesting that would be something that would be complied with per different statutes and rules, that we do turn over data upon request, whether it's included in a report or not, again, at the discretion of the practitioner. The other thing, when I read through this, I am a little concerned, and I'm going to give an opinion here that is my own and is not necessarily that of the board's, that this is an issue where the school really has the onus to follow through with recommendations that are provided. The BCB, or the licensed behavior analyst here, conducts a functional behavior assessment, provides recommendations, provides opportunities for potential interventions, but at no point is the LBA, is there an agreement that this individual is going to be the one that provides said intervention. In fact, the school is tasked with being able to carry out that goal and being able to support this child. And if they need additional assistance, then they should by all means contract that or bring that in or extend the contract with the individual that may have conducted the assessment if appropriate. There are times where that is the expectation, and that very well, when that is the expectation, then that should be followed through by the agency, regardless of who the LBA is or the LBA exits, as that is a contract between the school and the agency. And so I think that in this case, I also I question where the disconnect is, or I question where really some of this angst should be positioned. And I am not quite sure that it falls squarely on the LBA's shoulders at this point, that there are other parties involved, particularly that of the school, that need to be held to their obligations and to be able to serve this child. With that, I will entertain a motion, or I'm happy to make my own.
Before we make the motion, one of the things that I would add in addition to this is the school did request an SBA. There was no request that I saw for a behavior intervention plan. Knowing that there were behavior analysts who were also working outside and other individuals within the school, one of the questions that I just had internally was, you know, and again, another opinion why that school did not request subsequent support following that. So we can certainly move to a motion.
Do you want to make that, or shall I go ahead?
I will let you, since you have led this and really pioneered for us.
Did you say you wanted me to?
Yeah.
I thought you said you wanted to because you felt bad that I was doing all the talking.
We would go in the same direction. So if you would like me to talk point, I'm happy to talk.
I got it. So my motion is to recommend the recommendation to the full board of psychologists is that this case be dismissed as there's not sufficient evidence of a rule or statute violation.
I would second that.
Any discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you very much. Complaint number 2226 regarding Jessica Marshall has been referred to the board with a recommendation for dismissal. Thank you to all who participated for this complaint review today. The complaint and the licensee were notified by board staff in writing with any other follow-up, which I don't believe there is in this case. So thank you very much. And
thank you.
One thing I will just say before we drop off here is that there was the question around that's at the end of the complaint about the Dr. Marks and the BCBAD and the licensure type that we have. And so we will most likely try to cover that at a later date. But the board has had some discussions in the past about best ways to kind of reference non-practicing behavior analysts so that the public is not confused. And so maybe more to come on that in the coming meetings. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Stenhoff, I will turn the mic back over to you.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Davey. All right, moving on. Let's move into the review of the applications. First application is Erica Desjardins.
Can I just have 2 minutes?
Dr. Dave.
Yeah, I just need 2 seconds to, if we can have a 2 minute break maximum.
Okay, why don't we say 10 minutes just so we can insert the comfort break there. Okay. And we will reconvene at 10:40.
Where we take that break. The code
yes.
Word, the code word is monsoon. It's monsoon. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Malice. We'll again reconvene at 10:40. Move on to Erica Desjardins, Ms. Denton. You are the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Desjardins passed her exam on July 7th of 2022 after graduating with a Master of Education in Special Education from Arizona State University in May of 2020. Her supervision ranged from July of 2019 until September of 2021. She received 1,673 hours of supervision, all under licensed behavior analyst in good standing from In Bloom. At this point in time, I did not note any concerns with the application. All pieces of that application were completed in full and accurately from what I could see. And I would move that this moves forward to the full board for review.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to Kristen Robertson. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that.
Yes. So Ms. Robinson comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona, lists that she has held an Arizona Department of Education certification as well. Also indicated on question number 12 that she had had been under awaiting a trial under indictment or been convicted, pled no contest or guilty to a felony or misdemeanor. The applicant provided a written statement and documentation for an incident on January 22nd of 2005, indicating that she was arrested for a DUI, provided information with regard to what had transpired on the evening, as well as then documents around that showed kind of the course adjudication of the matter, and that provided us what information was available, given that it was past 10 years and Virginia did not keep records longer than that. And looking at the matter, it appears that it was a long time ago in her past. I appreciate her coming forward with the information, checking the appropriate box, and giving us the information we need to move forward. With regard to the remainder of the application, it is completed in its entirety. It lists that her supervision work was done, or supervision work towards licensure was done at under Dr. Andrew Gardner and Dr. Hartzell, and that those both of those individuals are licensed in the state of Arizona. Even with the information provided on the DUI, and given the time frame of which it occurred, and the fact that the applicant has been on has had no other incidences since then, I move that this go forward to the full board for approval.
Great, thank you. Next application is Ms. Diamond Smith. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Absolutely. Ms. Smith comes forward for licensure in the state of Arizona after passing her board certified behavior analyst exam in April of 2022. She finished her master's in science in ABA from Capella University. We have a little bit of a typo here. The transcript lists that she completed her degree on December 31st of 2021. On page 4 of her application, she noted that she graduates in December of 2022. I think it's just a small typo that can be fixed on her form. But since the transcript lists the appropriate date, given the times, other than that typo, I'm not concerned with her completing her master's degree on time before she became a BCBA. She received all of her supervision in the state of Arizona under licensed behavior analyst. With that being said, she notes 2,905.44 hours of supervision that were completed across 19 months. That would place too many hours occurring in each month over the 130. However, with all of that being said, since she completed so many above that 1,500, there would be 435 hours that could be discounted entirely, and she would still meet the 1,500 statutory requirement. At this point, other than that small typo, I don't have any concerns for this application. We could have discounted 435 hours from any of the licensed behavior analysts who oversaw her. So with that, I would ask board staff to have her correct that small typo, and then it moves forward to the board for a full review.
Great, thank you. Let's see. We'll go with Jeannie Aguilar. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead on that one.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Sinhoff. All right, Ms. Aguilar passed her exam in November of 2007. She is standing in Texas. She completed a doctorate of special education with emphasis in ABA from the University of Texas, and she did do 1,500 hours between the periods of August of 2006 and 2007 when licensure was not required in Texas. So I have reviewed this application. I see no concerns, and I recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Okay, thank you. Next application is Chelsea Blackwell. I did note that Ms. Blackwell is on the call as well. Ms. Blackwell received her BCBA certificate in April of 2021. She graduated in December of 2019 from Ball State University with a Master's of Arts in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under Jesse Vaughn in Indiana, which at the time did not require licensure. And then she received another 824.5 hours under Elizabeth Ginger in Tennessee, who is an LBA. Ms. Blackwell is also licensed in Tennessee and is in good standing. And I did not know any concerns with the application recommended to the board for approval. Ms. Blackwell, thank you for attending. Would you like to say anything, or are you okay?
Hi, thanks for having me. I just want to say thank you for taking the time to approve my license. As you mentioned, I was previously licensed in the state of Tennessee, and I've just recently moved here. So I'm excited to and thankful to have the opportunity to practice here as well. So I really appreciate your guys' time.
Well, welcome. And just a point of clarification. So this committee recommends that it move forward to the board for them to approve your licensure. So one more step, but that's where we're at right now, just to clarify.
Thank you for that clarification.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Okay. Next application is Fumi Horner. Dr. Reitz, you're the lead on that.
Dr. Stenhoff. This is Dr. Davey. I just want to make a note that Fumi Horner works for the same organization that I recently accepted a position with. She does not directly report to me, and I have no issues with helping making decisions on this matter.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Okay, Dr. Reitz?
Yes. So this is the second review for this applicant. The application was initially reviewed last month, and it was noted that one of the individuals identified as providing supervision was not credentialed the full time of that supervision. So we did request additional information. The applicant did supply that information. There were multiple supervisors at the agency where she received those hours, and we did receive a signed form for all of those hours. So in review, I would say that this meets the requirements, and we can move it forward at this point with the additional information provided.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Next application is Anthony Hedgepeth. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead on that.
Yes. So Mr. Hedgepeth took his exam or passed his exam in April of 2022. He completed a special education master's with an emphasis in ABA from the University of Arizona in May of 2021. He did 1,500 hours across licensed behavior analysts between September of 2019 and December of 2021. I reviewed the application and I do not have any concerns. I recommend it for full board approval.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. All right. Next application is Jane Tamick. I note that there is a Jane present, but I'm not sure if it's Jane Tamick. But
It is. I'm here.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. All right. So I'm the reviewer for that. Ms. Tamick received her BCBA certificate in November of 2016. She graduated in December of 2015 from Ball State University with Master's of Arts in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under Kelly Curtin in Illinois, which at the time did not require licensure. Ms. Tamick submitted her BACB experience verification form instead of her supervisor, Ms. Curtin. She also provided documentation showing attempts to contact Ms. Curtin as well as part of her BACB forms. Given the circumstance of her application, may be held up if she waits for Ms. Curtin. I wanted to throw that out to my other committee members and see if they have any other comments regarding this situation. And Ms. Tamick, I'm going to ask a question. We do have documentation that you did attempt and got a reply as well, but yet no documentation has arrived at our office. Ms. Pakanon, Ms. Malice, is that still accurate that there has been no
documentation? Yes, the last, sorry, that was me. Were you asking someone else?
Yeah, I was asking Ms. Pakanon and referring to Ms. Malice whether it comes, but I will certainly throw a question your way here in a moment. So,
Ms. Malice, can you address Dr. Stenhoff's question?
Yes, we have not received anything.
Okay. So, Ms. Galvin, is there a do we need to go into executive session to discuss this, or you know, from a legal perspective, how might we move forward with her application?
Yeah, does the applicant have any information about the lack of documentation, or whether we could expect its arrival, or?
Ms. Tamick?
Okay, sorry. She has replied back because I keep reminding her. The last text that I sent were
in July, because after that, because she had indicated, yes, I'm going to do it. Yes, I'm going to do it. And she just hasn't done it yet. The last phone contact I attempted was August 16th, leaving a voicemail again, just, you know, trying to do like a friendly reminder, like you need these forms to be filled out. So it's not, she has made, I know that she's, you know, alive and well, it's just, she's not following through. So I don't know how else to kind of shake it down. So that's where I'm kind of trying to figure out what else I could provide or give that everybody would feel comfortable with, you know, moving forward with my application if for some reason she just doesn't follow through. I mean, certainly personality wise, I'm not entirely surprised by the challenges in getting this done, especially since I live in a different state and we haven't seen each other or really talked that much in, it's been like 6 years or so. So just trying to figure out if there's any other options.
Ms. Mellis, has the board communicated directly and requested these documents, or has it been left to the applicant, which it obviously should be left to the applicant? I just didn't know if the board has stepped in.
I have not contacted the supervisor for this applicant.
I don't know if that's something that the board wants to explore. Obviously, we shouldn't have to be in that position, but on the other hand, the other avenues haven't produced any documents.
Everyone would be in favor of contacting. That way, if there's a failure to contact, we can essentially look at opening up a complaint with regard to not responding to a regulatory body in a timely fashion that then could be moved perhaps to the BACB to get the individual's attention.
You could issue a subpoena to her for the production of documents.
And we all, that's a non-binding subpoena, right? Because it's out of state.
It is, but sometimes it persuades individuals to comply.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Dr. Davey, I was going the same direction you were, slight difference in that the ethics code even requires that the individual comply with the request of producing supervision documentation at the supervisor, supervisee level. And I bring that up because I agree with you. I think, you know, this, I think at this stage it could be forwarded to the BACB as a potential concern. It's outside of our jurisdiction. We could try to subpoena the individual to come. Or I mean, I don't know, and perhaps this is where Dr. Stenhoff was suggesting maybe legal advice, but I feel like at this point, it's almost, I understand having to do our due diligence, but we have the documentation before us. We have an individual that's been certified for quite some time. We have proof that there has been attempts to contact this person. We could issue a subpoena. Maybe that would persuade her to do it, but that does two things for me. One, that delays this applicant for another month. And two, it still wouldn't change my mind that a report to the BACB needs to be made, because at this point, I mean, the ethics code's very clear that supervisors are to produce supervision documentation upon request in a timely manner. So I guess my question would be, do we have the authority to move in that direction? If that results in needing to go into executive session, we can, but I do believe our rules state that we can accept documents from the applicant after exhausting many pathways. I wouldn't say all, because I would agree the board reaching out would do that, but that's also at the expense of the licensure being delayed for a month, and that also doesn't sit really well with me either.
I agree. Ms. Tamick, you had a comment?
Yes, I didn't realize, I forgot about the needing to provide the supervision documents. I think if I lightly expressed her, because it's not like she's been completely unresponsive, she just hasn't followed through. If I bring that up to her, I think that that might get me what I need in a quicker fashion.
So I guess my question to you on that is, I'm sorry, Tisha. My question to you on that, because I was looking at this from a perspective, because I think whether the documentation comes today or a month from now, my position on the ethics code doesn't change necessarily. But I guess for me, I was looking at it from a perspective of looking at the timelines for you, that if you would like the opportunity to reach out for her, if it would be your expressed interest for perhaps the board to also try to reach out to her to kind of nudge that. I'm not opposed to that, but I think what that means then is that at least delays the application by a month. If she doesn't get it in by the cutoff, it could delay the application by 2 months. We would be sitting here again, and then we'd still be in the same place. So I understand that we also, and I appreciate you speaking up, because we also have our own kind of threshold of what we would deem appropriate in attempts of reaching out to colleagues. And so I welcome your feedback on that. I just wanted to make sure that you understood what type of delay that would create to licensure.
For sure. And that is, of course, incredibly frustrating. But in terms of if I were to raise a complaint to the board as part of the ethics, I do need to address it to her first of, hey, you're right now, you're in violation of this code. I really need this information before filing a complaint. So it is incredibly frustrating that it could get delayed even further, but I feel like I would need to take that step and bring it up to her, the violation that she's encountering or was threatening, I don't know the right term for that, before then saying, okay, fine, now I'm filing the complaint and I can push this forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that feedback. Then I retract everything that I said, and I would support Dr. Davies' recommendation of the board also make attempts, because maybe that'll also help, that we will also make an attempt. You will make an attempt one more time. And then we'll revisit this matter at the next meeting and make a decision at that time. I appreciate you speaking up to that, and I appreciate you acknowledging that. And it's really nice to have kind of that pathway modeled, even when there are sacrifices that you have to take for that. So thank you very much.
I would also say, Ms. Hammack, it is fantastic that you appeared here today. Additionally, you supply documentation for your BACB experience verification forms. So those monthly, or I think at that point, it was even every 2 weeks. So you still had that documentation signed by your supervisor. Oftentimes we don't see that people are coming forward with documentation from years ago. So I just wanted to express gratitude for you being a prepared behavior analyst seeking licensure in the state of Arizona.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so do we frame this up under a formal additional information request? Is that, or, okay, no? I'm seeing yes is a no.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Galvin, I am not sure that does a fair apply to a third party request?
No, I mean, are we still okay on timelines? You could categorize it as a fair so we don't run afoul of any timelines, but are we okay on timelines?
We are. So we have the 240 days. I'll have to get with Ms. Malice to figure out when that clock started ticking, but it couldn't have been all that long ago. So when I reach out to a former supervisor, what I do is I, of course, you know, impress upon them the importance of submitting the documentation. And what I say is that the Committee on Behavior Analysts cites these sections of the code when discussing this issue. So it isn't so much you might be in violation of this code, but these are the sections of the code that the committee's paying attention to, and so should you.
I think that that's fine, and I can assist you drafting if you need anything. Thank you. I wouldn't call it a fair. I think we still have plenty of time. to wrap this up.
Okay. So, Dr.
Stenhoff, if I may, I want to piggyback on what Tisha said regarding the applicant, the documentation. I don't know if it was the really cool ethics class from her university or what, but this is a model application. And I think even the presentation and being here today, being able to answer the questions, and again, regardless of the sacrifice, saying like, nope, I need to go through these processes. I mean, there's ever anyone I've met that's really understood our ethical responsibility to the profession. I think that this is a really good example of such.
Oh my goodness. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. So, and board staff, are all of those requests noted there? Okay. Thank you. All right. So let's move on to, applications for by universal recognition. First application is Jenica Warner, who I'm reviewing. Ms. Warner is seeking application through universal recognition. She's been licensed in Washington since July of 2017, satisfying the adopted substantive policy statement requiring an applicant to be licensed in another state for at least 12 months. She also provided evidence of residency with her Arizona driver's license, and I did not note any concerns and recommended or the board for approval. Next application is Jennifer Lee. Dr. Rates, you're the lead on that.
Yes, so this applicant comes to us for universal recognition. They are an active license in Utah since 2016. In reviewing the application, they have established residency and they meet all of the requirements. So I would recommend that we do move this forward to the board for full approval.
Okay, thank you. And then Adrian Szabo, Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that. And I did note that Ms. Szabo's on the line as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Szabo is seeking licensure via universal recognition. I am so glad you are here because I most certainly had some questions. Whenever it came to this, you noted that you had been licensed in the state of California. Whenever I look through the BACB's documentation as far as which states require licensure, whenever I look through our own information historically as far as which states require licensure, I am not aware that California issues licensure as for behavior analysts. I did look through a little bit. You have a certification or licensure number. I was wondering if this pertained to that. I did some digging here, the California Law and Ethics Examination that perhaps could come. Can you explain a little bit about where you're coming from in terms of licensure in California?
Yes. Hi, everyone. I'm Adrian, and I am a board certified behavior analyst. And I got that certification in California, where I'd never heard of a state license prior to moving here last month. So I started to see that requirement on some job, on job postings. So when I researched it, is where I realized that this is in the state of Arizona. So I sort of, when I filled out the application, I just was like, oh, I guess this is where I put my certificate number.
That makes sense. So just as a point of clarification, certification and licensure in the state of Arizona are two different things as opposed to some states that just require that you become certified, such as California. So licensure in the state of Arizona requires different components from our statutory requirements area in order to apply for universal recognition, which is the pathway that you've taken. You would have to have been licensed in another state, not certified, licensed in another state for at least 12 months. You have established residency, you supplied your Arizona driver's license, but additionally, that license in another state would have to be substantially equivalent to the requirements that Arizona puts forth. So what my recommendation would be to you is to, and I'm open to other comments from the committee members, to withdraw your universal recognition application and apply via the traditional route. I didn't note any concerns necessarily with you being a board certified behavior analyst. It just might mean for the state of Arizona, you need to take that traditional path and supply some of those experience verification forms showing, you know, the dates that you graduated, transcripts, those type of things. Is there any other comments from additional board member or committee members?
Mr. Chair, can I just sort of weigh in with an observation, and this would be up to the committee to recommend, but when an applicant is ineligible to apply or ineligible for a license on a specific application type, traditionally, historically, the committee and the board have allowed the application fee submitted in conjunction with that application to be transferred to the more appropriate application that you submit. So we wouldn't be necessarily asking you to submit two application fees. We would just transfer it, and just you would work with Ms. Malice to ensure that you access the correct application.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Pacman, if I may, you know, one thing that because the other application is going to look at whether or not you meet all of the state requirements, you may want to review those state requirements before making a decision as to whether or not you want to apply through that pathway. That would be an option available to you as well. And I do believe, Ms. Pacman, in those situations, we've also made considerations around the fees as well. Can you speak to that?
Sorry, would you elaborate? I'm not sure which fees you're...
The application fee.
Yes, yes.
If it was a full withdrawal and...
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely, yes. It's just sort of an accounting... you know, an accounting maneuver, if you will, that we have to do on our end. It's very straightforward.
Okay. And Ms. Savo, thank you so much for being here. I absolutely wanted to see if there was something I was missing in terms of California licensure and where things went. I did my digging, but I certainly appreciate you being here.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
From what I understand, I reviewed the other application, and it's asking for old college transcripts and signatures from old supervisors, and verification of my 1500 hours, and all these things that the BACB has already done, you know, for you or for me. I'm not able to start helping, you know, families because I need to re-provide this now to the board here. Is that it?
yeah, that was fairly well summarized. Here's where it is, and then Ms. Galvin or somebody else can jump in as well. But this committee and the board, the psychology board, operates under the state rules and statutes by the laws of the state of Arizona. And because of that, we operate. And in this committee recommends forwarding, and then the board has to approve under those statutes and rules. And that's because of those statutes and rules, that's where things stand. So what you're suggesting is correct, but at the same time, it's because that is the law and rules of the state of Arizona for that evidence to be provided to be considered for licensure in the state. So, yes.
And whenever it comes to, Mr. Chair, sorry. Whenever it comes to helping residents of Arizona and those kiddos who are needed, I'll just speak as an individual here, not necessarily representing the board. You know, sometimes what I do for people who have become a BCBA but are in the process of becoming licensed, we continue that supervision over them. Now, you can't be credentialed typically with funders until you are licensed, but allowing you to help those individuals if you were overseen by a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona. You know, we certainly understand that there is a need for help for our public in Arizona, and that could be an option for you until you move through the Arizona state requirements.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may, I was going to suggest the same thing. Licensures for independent practice, and I know it's strange coming from California because licensure isn't there, but we're at nearly 40 states that require licensure now. So whether it's here, whether it's Nevada, whether it's Texas, whether it's Alaska, whether it's Kentucky, it's actually addressed from kind of a legal perspective in the ethics code, and then provided in supplemental information through like APBA and other professional development of if you're going to relocate, it really is incumbent upon you to make sure that that you know the state laws of where you are relocating. And the BCB actually has a really nice website. On their website, they actually have a section for licensure resources. So you can click on it and you can see which states require it and how you find those things. And so it isn't something that is new. You know, here in Arizona, I think Indiana was the first, no, not Indiana, because they just got licensed. We were like second. I don't remember who was first, but we were second. I know that maybe Kentucky. We've been licensed since 2009. So this isn't like a new, like this has been a movement across the state. What makes licensure different from certification is kind of an attestation to the credentials that have been set forth by an accrediting body. And so they kind of monitor that you do meet the competencies under their accreditation to carry this certification. But when you move to a state that has licensure, the regulation is actually a public protection piece. So it's not unique to professions. So counselors, psychologists, foot doctors, pediatricians, when they relocate, everywhere they go, they do have to meet those requirements. Now, I think Tisha brings up a really good point. The first one being that that many employers are very familiar with this. And so even if you're looking at employment opportunities, you can still apply and speak to them about the current status. And many of them are fully aware and still hire people and still as they're going through the process, knowing that they're not quite licensed yet. The other piece to that is that this is for independent practice. So there are mechanisms under which employers can have you serve in roles that are not independent practice roles. And so there are definitely ways to one, be able to work and make an income, because that's part of it, no matter how we swing it, right? And then the other piece, to contribute back to the community. So I would still encourage, if you know, this is all new and you're still trying to learn, I would still encourage you to seek those employers and speak to them, because I think you'd be pretty surprised at how many of them are like, oh yeah, not a big deal, and can work things with you, because this isn't a new process for us. I know it is for you, but I assure you in the state, it's not a new process for all of us. So hopefully that helps. I know it's a little, it's a big move and then a little discouraging when you get there, like, well, now what?
Yeah. Thank you for the explanation. I mean, I do appreciate the extra regulations for sure, you know, for in the industry. I guess I initially was like, okay, so I have to apply and, you know, not going to be as extensive, where, like I said, it's already done this. Already, you know, they already have all my information. So I guess that's a discouraging part about it. But if there are avenues, that's great news.
And I would add too that we may not have all that information because the certification requirements and state licensure requirements differ. There's components of documentation that may also differ. So there is one state, two states that you could just say, here's my certificate, can I get a license? And that is the documentation they request. And if you have an active certificate, they issue a license. Our statutes are more thorough than that. So what we're reviewing and what other states may be reviewing are actually above and beyond the BACB credentials. And then we have, as public protection, we have an obligation to ensure that that those credentials meet our state statute. So we can't ensure that by taking the BACB's word for it, because if the BACB lost the file, made a mistake, we're busy or whatever, and then we just say, well, the BACB said it's okay, but we didn't check it, then there could be legal ramifications for that as it pertains to the state statute. So I know that it's kind of, and it seems like a repetition of stuff, but we are specifically looking to make sure that the documentation you have meets the statutory requirements, and those do in some ways differ from the requirements of the BACB.
And I will just add, since we're having a licensure 101 class, that in no way, shape, or form will the state of Arizona, this committee, or the Board of Psychology abdicate its responsibility to Arizona's citizens to the BACB. That is just not a thing. So that is why you have at the state level this committee and the license and the Arizona State Board of Psychologists. And that's someone who's been a BCBA for a long time, but it's not their role to step into state matters, and nor will they step into state matters. I just didn't want to not have anything to say in the conversation. Like, I was like, all right, fun stuff.
Paige, what do you have for us?
I feel like we should give an ethics credit. It's Malice, do you have a code for an ethics credit for those that are here?
Okay. So any further comments from the committee members? Okay. Ms. Zava, are you clear on kind of next steps? What needs to take place?
So I withdraw my application. And then fill out the new one, submit that.
Yes.
Anyone can ask for help with that?
Ms. Abo, so you would just need to, the withdrawal process is, we keep it super informal. You can just send an email to Ms. Malice, who you've corresponded with, I know, or to me, whatever's easiest. In terms of helping you, board staff can provide some guidance. We can't serve as sort of a coach or anything of that nature. We can't give you too much guidance because, of course, we have to be objective in the process of receiving and analyzing the documentation that you submit. I don't know if you are a member of the state chapter, the association, but I believe that there are individuals who are members of that group who have provided sort of mentoring around that that responsibility. So maybe that's a source for you to reach out to if you need more help than board staff is authorized to provide to you. But Ms. Malice can certainly guide you to the application, and hopefully the instructions are clear enough that they don't create any challenges for you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Okay, so that concludes the applications. Do we have can we get a summary of those that we can move forward to the board and make a motion?
Yes. So the summary for all of the applicants, Erica is fine to move onto the board. Jeannie is fine to move onto the board. Kristen is fine. number four has to correct the typo and she can then move forward. Chelsea can move forward. Clooney can move forward. Number seven, Anthony can move forward. Number eight, for Jane, we have to make some attempts to get the documentation, and then she may appear at the next committee meeting for next month. For B1, Jenica is fine to move forward. Number two, Jennifer Lee is fine to move forward. And number three, we'll submit a withdrawal letter.
Thank you, Ms. Malice. Do we have a motion as summarized by Ms. Malice?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor of the summary provided by Ms. Malice, say aye.
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 Okay, and opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, next item is possible action regarding Marie Salad's failure to submit supervision verification documentation. Ms. Pakanon.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this matter is coming back to you at your request. It relates to your previous review of the application of Susie Campfield, now a licensed behavior analyst in Arizona. The application reflected that her attempts to obtain submission by Ms. Salad of her supervision verification documents were rebuffed and denied. And so this committee had directed me to invite her to come before the committee to provide an explanation and for the committee to discuss with her the responsibilities that you have cited many times in the code of conduct, which are cited in your memorandum. As you can see, the attempts that I made to invite her, encourage her to attend this meeting were not addressed, not responded to. And so unless, you know, she's here under someone else's name, I don't think that we can expect her to participate in this the discussion of this agenda item. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Committee members, questions or comments regarding this?
Mr. Chair, one of the statements I made in your memorandum would be perhaps there you want to hold some discussion around whether to recommend to the board that a referral be made to the BACB for that organization to conduct their own investigation relative to these facts and circumstances, acknowledging that Ms. Salad is not licensed in the state of Arizona, so you don't have regulatory authority over her. This board does not. And so it would seem that the BACB would be the only entity who could look into these concerns further.
Well, since there was no comments or questions from the fellow committee members, I would make a motion that due to the hesitancy to produce the documentation, that she move forward to the board for, for them to make a referral to the BACB regarding the lack of production of the documents that were requested by the applicant and the licensee. Do I have a second on that?
I will second that.
Okay. Further discussion? Okay. Let's go ahead and vote. Those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. Then motion carries. So we'll move that to the board for that action. Thank you. Thanks, Ms. Beckham. All right. Consideration of possible action regarding Telehealth Advisory Committee on Telehealth Best Practices. Dr. Dave.
Well, I finally have something to update. We produced our report to the governor's office, and I am proud to say that pertaining to behavior analysts, licensed behavior analysts in the state of Arizona, that the CAHPS guidelines on telehealth practice were wholly accepted and were essentially adopted by the state as best practice in providing behavior analytic services via telehealth. You also see there, for those of you that work in multidisciplinary organizations, there are some other guidelines in psychiatry, social work, OT, that were also adopted by the state. And so we continue to work on our efforts here in the state, driven by the governor's office and access to expand coverage by kind of forcing the issue around telehealth. We continue to look at codes that we want to see permanently allowed for. We continue to work with that, not only here through access and through this stakeholder group that includes both physical and behavioral health professionals, but we're also helping to inform CMS on our beliefs and feelings here coming from the great state of Arizona. That is my update today. We have another meeting at about, I believe, this fall, and we'll continue our work in the months ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Davis. All right, next item is...
I had one question for Dr. Davy. I think you covered it, but just to clarify in my head. So right now it's similar to like the recommendations of the ASD committee that then turned into Access developing policies. So that's where you guys are at. You guys have made these recommendations and now Access has to decide on how they're going to set code sets should they decide to adopt those recommendations.
At this point, it's my understanding that as these are going, Access is working behind the scenes, as this is a direct order from the legislature and the governor's office to get these codes identified and move forward. I believe that they're concurrently working on policy. They were not waiting around by any means.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. And then I would imagine that if on the national front, as the COVID restrictions go away and people cut off telehealth, that Access is intending on progressively moving forward instead of...
Yes, Arizona is wanting to move forward. Like they are with CMS around Medicaid right now. I mean, again, this is tied to Access and Medicaid products at this point. The hope is that they will help move the needle on commercial. Whether we see that, we know. But just because CMS is coming out with something, I will just tell you that the proud state of Arizona does not necessarily feel the same way. In fact, in this case, we seem to be a little bit more liberal in our approach to the code set. And I think that has to do with our maverick status and our semi-rural setting. So I expect to see, just being a member of the committee and listening to those talk that are both engaged in physical and behavioral health aspects, as well as Access being a champion, that we'll see the code set expand over time.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I just for the record, love living in Arizona when it comes to some of these policies that are coming through, because I think we are paving the way for access to care across a lot of populations. So this is great. Thank you for that work, Dr. Davy.
My pleasure.
Any further comments or questions for Dr. Davy? Next agenda item, updates from the BACB, Ms. Pakenal.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that. I do think Ms. Malice may want to jump in with the next code word before I
Thank
do that.
Thank you.
Yes, yeah. The next code word is humid. Humid. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Pakenal.
At least we know like Ms. Malice's disposition around things, right? We've got monsoon, we've got now humidity. You know, next we're gonna get what? We're gonna get wind, I can only imagine what the third one is if we don't get to it. But I think
it's gotta be Haboob. It's gotta be.
But I think there'd be some misspellings and then people wouldn't get credit. But I really think that we should make this part of our game, is to kind of like understand where Ms. Miles is coming from and her day-to-day, sentiment around, what's going on around her. So I can't wait for next week. The psychology.
You probably wouldn't want that.
I think we already get low insight. Ms. Poe gives hers. Like I sit there, around 4th of July, she's talking about hamburgers and hot dogs and party. Like, I think it really gives us a lot of insight into what's going on.
On that point, I would just like to note, as somebody whose ceiling just caved in from the horrible weather, these are all trigger words for me. I would appreciate that my perspective right now be taken into consideration next time too.
Oh, wow.
Oh no, that's terrible.
We will recognize that's trigger, and maybe you just kind of have to turn down your volume, because I don't think you're going to shut this off, unfortunately. But hey, Halloween's coming, and soon it'll be fall. That's all I can keep thinking as I sweat.
The code words are closely guarded secrets, even among staff. So they're as much a surprise to us as they are to you. So BACB issued two updates to regulators on the listserv. The first one provides some information and a little bit of perspective around comparing certification programs that are alternatives, I should say, to the BACB. So what I've just I'll share with this group, just my observation has been, as I look at the meeting minutes and meeting agendas of other behavior analyst regulatory boards around the country, I just sort of check on a few now and then, just for curiosity's sake. I am seeing increasingly that boards are having some conversations around comparing different certification programs. So for what that is worth, that is what I'm seeing. And so I just offer that to you. And then the second topic is a topic that I think this group is quite familiar with. And it's some guidance around the equivalency evaluation for what Pennsylvania, the state or the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, excuse me, calls the behavior specialist license, and what the meaning of license really is, and how it isn't congruent to the state of Arizona's license for behavior analysts. So perhaps there was some new information in that communication, but you have looked at this issued in the recent past. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you have about this material.
I don't have
any questions.
Not about that particular material, but the most recent email that kind of came from the listserv, Ms. Bakanon, about, I think it came maybe 2 days ago, about in some states we're seeing closures of ABA organizations, and the reality around properly discharging or transitioning children in care or those in care, and that really the BACB, and in fact this board, as referenced in an earlier matter, does not have jurisdiction over said agencies. And so if those complaints are brought forward around the BAC, around the LBA, that we may need to be sensitive to the fact that they did not have the ability to transition properly, did not have access to records, and so on. And so, you know, as much as the public conversations have been around large organizations, I see this as also, we're kind of at a crossroads with kind of pandemic dollars drying up that may have been propping up even smaller organizations. And so my comment back to that kind of notice was, I think this could be happening across the board. It's not just large multi-state providers that could be impacted.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, you did an excellent job of foreshadowing the content that I was saving for next month's agenda. Oh, so I will acquiesce the summary to you, since you did such a great job. So yes, that's an issue that it isn't unique to this profession. As you can, I'm certainly understand or appreciate, physical therapy has struggled with very similar issues when, you know, the corporate practices are really the concern, but there is no outlet through which, you know, a consumer can, you know, truly report to, you know, a regulatory authority the concerns. So there is no perfect solution of which I am aware. I know that this is something that is going to plague this profession as it has others.
Thank you for that commentary. I think it's important to understand that it's not just us. As much as we always feel that, you know, we have such a myopic view of what goes on, that it actually has happened in other fields and other professions.
Indeed it does. So you'll see that next month. And maybe more from the BACB. So
thank you. Okay, next agenda item, consideration, possible action regarding review of behavior analyst application against that. I'm not going to read it all. And potential revisions to the application.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And I invite you to chime in as much as you would like, since you got implicated into this exercise. So the way that I perceive this, or the relevance of this, is really, I guess, twofold. Some questions were raised, some discussion was held previously relative to, are we asking all the questions to which we want the answers that we need to ask? But first, we need to ascertain, are we asking any questions with the application that aren't supported or authorized by the statutes or rules? And so what the review that Dr. Stenhoff and I completed was that we did not find instances of that. There was one case where I did flag, I think it was the one question, but Dr. Stenhoff, I remember you saying that and I'm opening the application right now, I apologize, I should have had it open. You felt the question was appropriate and that the rule did justify asking it. And it had to do, I think, with the academic advisor. At any rate, we didn't find any instances where we are flagrantly asking questions and the rules don't allow us to. We did find instances where we're going to have to reframe certain questions because of the change in the BACB certification requirements. And so we know those will need to be addressed at a future date. And I have every intention of making sure that we are ready to do that and we aren't caught off guard, or we aren't late in doing so. But I think the other reason that we needed to sort of do this exercise is because we are anticipating, probably on next month's agenda, we're going to be having some discussion around questions relating to the nature of the supervision, the type of the supervision, the role of the supervisors, and are we really getting to all of that information to fully inform you as you review an application? So that we didn't quite have that discussion ready for this agenda, but I anticipate it will be on next month's agenda. Hopefully all that made sense, but let me know if you have any questions or if I need to do a better job of explaining it.
Ms. Packen, on that, you summarized everything. Well, so like you said, there was very little on the application to zero that was of any concern at this point. So, any questions or comments on that?
Okay, great.
Okay, so Ms. Packen, anything further on that?
No, I will. Work with Ms. Galvin, that she is really essential to the next, the agenda items that we're preparing for next month. We have asked her to weigh in on some of those things. I do expect, anticipate the possibility we will need to do some rulemaking, which every year I will budget for rulemaking to occur. So I want to ensure we have the resources to make sure that if we need to implement policy changes, we don't have to wait to do that, or we're not restrained from doing that work.
Okay. Great. All right. So next agenda item is suggested items for next meeting or future meetings. I know Dr. Davey has been very patiently waiting to express his agenda item. And so do you want to go first, Dr. Davey, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think today, in terms of the complaint, I think that the counsel for the licensee brought up a very valid point at the end with regard to this committee's previous discussions around the use of credentials and the use of the term board certified behavior analysts when they are not licensed behavior analysts, and how the public is to discern the difference between the two. So auto signatures, LinkedIn profiles, lists of credentials, we still have a title and practice act, and the title of behavior analyst is protected under our statutes, and it is defined. And so I am interested in having a discussion around that. I don't know that I want to open a complaint immediately. I think perhaps it's a discussion first, and then maybe a substantial policy notice or something, and then we go forward. But I do think we need to revisit this, as people, you know, license as Dr. Davis Wilson pointed out, you know, we've had licensure now for a long time. There's going to be people that drop off. There's going to be, God, I wish I was getting ready to retire. I mean, really, the only person old enough for that is Stenhoff, but the rest of us, you know, but when he drops off and wants to retain his BCBAD but not his licensure, like, how do we denote that for him? One, to be able to, you know, maybe put non-practicing or not, you know, not licensed in Arizona. What are we going to tell individuals that have earned the right to have that BCBAD and maintain it, but are just not interested in maintaining active practice in Arizona? And in so doing, how do we make sure the public is aware of that? So I think that I'd like to see that as a future topic, and perhaps some guidance from Ms. Galvin about what psychologists do. Like, they maintain a PsyD, but maybe they're not licensed, and they're allowed to keep PsyD on there. And there is no, that it's on the onus of the public to understand after a certain time frame that there is licensure in the state. So I'd be interested in just having a conversation.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I agree with that. I do want to note to that point, though, that PsyD is a educational credential and not like a professional credential that may look different, but that's why we need to have the conversation. But I would add to that too, you know, we never defined or carved out an exception of services for like OBM like practitioners. And we're seeing a kind of influx across the nation of people leaving their employment and becoming consultants, going into organizations and serving in OBM practitioner type roles. Their staffs are understanding or assuming them to be behavior analysts. So there's this innate, I don't know what they're calling themselves or how that assumption is happening, but it is becoming an issue. And I think there's this, to that same point as what Dr. Davies is saying, I think there's this kind of thought of, well, but they're not billing insurance, so it doesn't count. And that's the practice and title is the practice and title. It doesn't matter who, you know, the funder matters a little bit in the fact that in the education setting, we know that we have a written exclusion to that. There are some states that exclude OBM practitioners. We've brought that part of the conversation to the table in rule writing, is do we want to try to come up with language to carve out, are we really concerned about behavior analytic practice as it pertains to healthcare or as it pertains to the whole practice? And what would that look like in how we carve that out of exclusions in the statute and the rules? But as far as I remember, we didn't land on any language or decision on that. But I think that that ties into what you're saying, Dr. Davey. It's not just kind of the casual, like, my LinkedIn has this, but some of these individuals are also operating under very weird disguises that everybody else in the nation may know an individual as being a behavior analyst, but here in Arizona, they're not calling themselves a behavior analyst, but they're doing OBM work. And that is becoming a very, very like interesting phenomenon. Not an, I'm like you, Dr. Davey, not enough for me to like figure out and like, and I definitely don't want to be on a witch hunt, but I think at best we need the conversation, and perhaps the association might want to do some educating of their members.
Yeah. I mean, I think to your point, like this term behavioral scientist, you know, we don't have that listed, but it's something that has come about in the last 5 years. And so we have individuals that are clearly practicing in behavior analysis who have essentially identified a new title that, you know, to the public, what does that mean? What is a behavioral scientist? Well, they also hold the distinction of a board certified behavior analyst, and that's in their credentials. One would make the assumption that they're good to go in the state. Like I think that that's part of this conversation for sure.
Mr. Chair, I'll make sure that the agenda item is broadly worded to, you know, encompass all of these kinds of issues under the that fall under this. I think Jean's not here, so I think I can get away with this. I think this conversation also needs to incorporate an element of title protection too. That is my opinion that I have been sharing liberally with those of you who will listen to me. So
I completely agree. And I think that we're going to need Jean to opine on this in a very significant way. So yes. Race her for it.
Okay. Other possible agenda items. Okay. Ms. Packham.
Hey, Dr. Stenhoff, sorry, before you move on. I just thought of one. Are we maybe in need, not this next month, but possibly the following month, maybe even December, it might be after elections, but we are, we have placeholder seats in the committee right now that aren't reappointed. And so I think we need that continue. Like right now, I think it's almost pointless to follow up on because we're in an election year. There's a lot of less priority into whether reappointment of board seats is important or not. But I think that it's important, and it's important to continue to keep the association aware of that status with association members that are present today. They've been attending meetings pretty diligently as well, but since they are the ones that have access to the members, I think it's going to be important because we've got board appointments that are coming up that may or may not in the next few months decide to reapply. We've got reapplications that have not been confirmed. So we could very quickly get ourselves coming out of whatever happens with the election. We could very quickly get ourselves in a little bit of a predicament of quorum and needing to fill spots. So I just wanted to bring up that fun topic again. It's no point. I think in the past we were like, well, let's check with the governor's office. I don't think directing Heidi to do that is useful at this time because we are low man on the totem pole, but not like the psychology board, all the boards, right? They've got other priorities right now. So, but something that we'll probably want to keep on the radar.
All right. Thank you. Any other items? Then Ms. Packanon, you mentioned about discussion perhaps afterwards. Is that still, or was that part of this discussion for the
about the October meeting date change?
Oh yes, yeah. Thank you. How quickly I forgot. So Dr. Davis-Wilson called to our attention first the possibility that because of a meeting that last Friday in October, wait a minute, am I making this up? Yeah, so Friday, October 28th, we may have missing members. And to complicate matters even further, Ms. Michelson and I will be at the annual meeting of ASPPB. So we were proposing to move the meeting to Monday the 31st. What I know to be the case is Dr. Rates has indicated she would be unavailable for that meeting. Where does everyone else stand? Dr. Davey, what did you tell me?
I don't know what I told you. It could have changed. It's probably changed since I've told you. So we'll just say I didn't respond.
You told me you would wear a costume. I do.
Well, that's right. Because it was Halloween. I'm totally wearing a costume.
Okay.
Depending on what time the meeting starts, I'm in class until about 9 o'clock that morning. So it's possible that might work.
Okay. So the typical 9:30 start time.
Yeah.
Okay. I could make that work.
Wonderful. I'm seeing nods from everyone, but sorry, Dr. Rates. I think we have to proceed without you.
If it started later, I could join. But I'm not sure how that works for everyone else's schedule. So
So this is on the 30th that we're suggesting?
31st. Monday the 31st.
Of October. I guess it helps if I look at the right month even, right?
I was going to say the 30th. I mean, I'll do a Sunday, but that's...
No, I was looking at September. I'm like, let's look at September. Yes, as long as I will need to be done by noon, but that's fine.
And we do plan on keeping this a shorter agenda, so we will not be scheduling any complaints for that meeting. Mm-hmm.
And I do have one addition to that is those of us that can't come on the 28th are likely going to be in the same spot. Do we have a potential quorum issue there that we need to post for public meeting notice?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you need me to send you the information, Heidi, so that you can post publicly that we will all be at the ASIABA conference with our dear colleagues who keep joining us. We're going to go crash their party this time.
Yes, please do, so I can make sure that the courtesy notice posted has those details, time, location, so the public is aware. Thank you.
Perfect.
Okay. Great.
Hey, anything further with the agenda items? Okay. Next item is adjournment. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
A second?
Second.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right.
Sorry, I lost my little button. I said aye, or I mean aye, the first one. I couldn't find the mute button.
Okay. Motion carries then. Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Appreciate